Hello and welcome to Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The refrigerator buying cheapo Chester's lying, keeping kids from dying guide to the very special episodes of yesteryear. I'm Jay McCain. With me is Aaron Hubbard. How you doing, Aaron?
Better now that I've heard your intro. It's honestly one of the highlights of my week to see what you're going to come up with. And you got the triple rhyme. The triple rhyme.
Yeah. If it's a good week, I'll bust out the triple rhyme. That's really stretching my creative juices to figure out three things.
Tonight we're talking about a very special episode of Punky Brewster. It's season 2, episode 16, Cherry Lifesaver.
I get it.
Yeah, because her friend Cherry. I gotta confess that I didn't know a lot about Punky Brewster. I was familiar with it. I'd seen a couple of episodes when it was on NBC. It got canceled. I guess it got re-syndicated. I knew it was on its like after school and afternoons at one point. And then like it faded from my memory. And I remember I got to my mid-20s and I heard that, did you notice Soleil Moon Frye? Like Punky Brewster got hot and I went to the internet and check out and I'll be damned. Yeah, Soleil Moon Frye grew up to be super hot.
Well, there you go.
Peacock just did a reboot of Punky Brewster, a 10 episode reboot that got canceled immediately over on Peacock. I'll have to check that out. Did you know anything about Punky Brewster before we came into this very special episode?
Not really. I seem to think that this was something my sister used to watch, but now I feel like I say that about every show.
My sister was like born, I think, the year before. If she had been, yeah, like any kid from like probably 10 to 15 or like, I guess, 8 to 13, maybe probably was into Punky Brewster, especially if you're a gal, because as I recall, I don't think there's a whole lot of like young women centered entertainment.
Right. Yeah. It's a little girl on TV. How are you not going to watch that if you're a little girl?
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of this episode?
I thought it was a little, saccharine, I guess, but, overall the message was good. I think I learned some things, some valuable take home knowledge from this one, enjoyable. I might've, got a little dusty in here at the end of the episode. Not gonna lie.
I'm glad you said that because I felt really stupid when I actually started getting caught up in the little girls saving the other little girl. And I started getting, not full on weeping, but yeah, dusty. I got dusty in the recording studio where I was watching it.
And we're not afraid to admit it, folks.
I will say this. This is where I started to see the cracks of this format of Feeny, is that a very special episode. It seems like it's got two paths. It can either be really effective at what it's trying to do, which is teach children the importance of CPR in this case, and even give them essentially rudimentary instructions on what to do, call 911, that kind of stuff. Or you can do a terrible job and be mostly entertaining, because this episode's not very fun to watch. It's not very entertaining.
No.
Nothing happens except for the setup to endanger the child. The child being endangered, and then the children working together to say everything else is just a sabo round to deliver that plot. And that plot's not fun. It's not fun. It's not funny. But I suspect it's going to score rather high on the very special index. So
yeah. It was like I said, I think effective vehicle. Although I don't know. I don't know if this actually got out there and saved any lives.
I bet at least one kid at least called 911. And that's the hilarious thing is that in my lifetime, the guidance for CPR has changed radically. Like, I remember when I went through CPR, because I did some kind of CPR class in junior high, and I didn't remember much of it. But then when I started working at FedEx, they offered free CPR classes. So I went there, and the guidance there was like one breath for every 10 chest compressions. And now I'm pretty sure the latest guidance is don't even bother breathing. It's all about keeping the blood pumping. They got plenty of oxygen to keep the body alive. You just got to keep pumping. And I don't know. I feel like if I feel like my son, I discover my son not breathing, non-responsive, I think I would still do a breath every like at least 20 compressions. I don't trust a new guidance.
I probably would too. I mean, it's got to have been in there from the beginning for a reason. Yeah. You know what? I'm trying to change career paths here in real life. And one of the things I'm going to have to do is get like CPR certified and all that stuff. So I'll be able to report back at some point.
I can't wait, because here's my theory. I've heard, I don't know if this is reliable information, I've heard that the only reason they switched the guidance is because they didn't want people to get confused. And the chest compression is by far the more important part. So I'm like, okay, if you are not good in crises or your head is completely up your ass, just pump on the chest. But since I got trained properly, I'm going to actually save my loved ones' lives. I don't know. Do whatever the instructors tell you to do. Your healthcare professionals, but I know what I would do if it's my loved one blew on the floor. Should we get right to Punky Brewster?
Let's jump in, shall we?
I usually remark on the theme song. I find the Punky Brew, I can't even remember what it sounds like. I just watched it an hour ago, and I have no memory of the tune. I know it's all a bunch of Toys R Us, multicolored kind of... No, it's not even that. I just get that wrong. That's just the main logo. I thought they did something fun with the credits. It's just teletyped on there. Do you know what the premise of this show is?
No, I don't. Old guy and little girl living together with a dog named Brandon.
Yeah, so Punky Brewster is a child that her father ran off and her mother abandoned her in Chicago.
Jeez.
In a shopping mall, leaving Punky alone with her dog. This Henry guy is an old widowed man who is a landlord for an apartment complex in Chicago. And she started squatting, I take it, in an abandoned apartment or like a vacant apartment, and struck up this friendship with one of the children, Cherry, who is the grandmother of this this Betty lady who works as a nurse over at Cook County Hospital in Chicago. And at the first season was primarily about Henry kind of like, oh, we got to get this kid in foster care and like being kind of curmudgeonly, and like Punky Brewster like kind of won him over with her plucky ways, and he decides to adopt her. And I guess much of the first season drama is like Henry trying to get his life in order so he can adopt her, and the whole adoption process. And in season two, she gets adopted, and I guess he's her dad now. But yeah, she just got abandoned at a shopping mall by her mom. Sad story.
That's pretty traumatic.
At least she had her dog. You know, I was
actually, that's true.
When I saw this dog, I'm like, God damn, another fucking dog in these sitcoms. It's almost like America's in love with them or something. And
another golden retriever, too.
I know. It's nothing says good with children like a golden retriever. And then I read the backstory where he was like her sole companion and comfort. And I'm like, oh, I kind of feel bad. I feel bad talking shit about Brandon. Anyway,
let's go.
All right. Well, we open in the Brewster residence as Punky's foster dad, or maybe her legally adopted father at this point, her caretaker, her guardian, is discovering that his ancient refrigerator is giving out, which means he's going to have to go and buy a new one. That's it.
Right.
That is the crisis. That's the inciting event of this episode.
I mean, it's a big deal when a major appliance breaks in your household. It's a thing for a while.
It is. But have you ever seen like the meme that's the format is like a guy that's in front of like a domino and he's about to flick it, and there's a series of giant dominoes, and it always starts
yes.
like Archduke Ferdinand and then 100 million dead or something. This is like old man's refrigerator dies, almost kills a child. Like how did this escalate? How did this escalate?
He's proud of this machine. It's an old standby refrigerator for him, and he doesn't want to see it go.
Do you know how like hard people online wank for these old refrigerators and stoves and stuff?
Oh, I believe it.
Like, I swear to God, there's not like you can find on Reddit all day, every day on the buy it for life. You know, people ask, you know, what's a good price? Oh, you gotta go back in time and buy the 1970 thing that's got the Freon that dissolves the ozone on contact. And it's been running like a top. I just have to top it off with the,
illegal Freon I source from Ecuador every 2.5 years. And other than that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That and cast iron skillets.
Cast iron, now I will, those are, that is a buy it for life. I don't, you have to really fuck up, be playing some kind of wild PUBG type scenario before one of those things are going to fail you. I noticed that, so this thing, yeah, like he, it starts farting, making this what sounds like a belch, and they blame it on a dog, but then black smoke starts rolling out the refrigerator, and it's a refrigerator. I'm endlessly fascinated. I never noticed this as a child, but all the fake, like, cereal brand, the brand names they invent for these shows, this was Sugar Beasties.
Which is a great name for a cereal.
It rhymes with diabetes, so you know where you're heading with the Sugar Beasties.
Comes with a free insulin injection.
So Betty, the neighbor next door, and the nurse, the grandmother of the best friend, walks in, comments about the smell, and then we also get the backdooring of the A plot, which is Punky mentioning that I wish this refrigerator is a human so I could use CPR on it, bring it back to life. It's a weird thing for a child to wish, but
we've been learning first aid in school.
Yeah. Yeah, at least some of us have. And we're going to find out how this is going. The next day at school, Punky and her friends learn CPR, except for Alan, who is another one of these TV juvenile delinquents that gets sent to the principal for acting out. And I wonder, Jay, will this be significant to the plot?
Well, since it's built like a Lego creation brick by brick, I think there's going to be an important event here.
I'm going to.
But
get,
yeah, Alan's a real chucklehead.
He is. I feel like I'm dispensing a lot of unlicensed medical opinions and advice, but I think this kid could use some sort of a stimulant therapy to control his oppositional defiance and ADD, because he just cannot not be the class clown, man.
Yeah. He's got some good lines.
Yeah. The teacher, I didn't catch his name, but he's teaching the kids the importance and trying to sober them up about, hey, kids, this could actually save your life. This isn't like long division where it turns out in the future you will have a calculator in your pocket everywhere you go. This could actually change the world, save lives, and it's not enough to convince Alan. They get out. Did your school do this, teach this stuff with the Resusciani?
No. Did yours?
We didn't have anything. We had a Resusciani, but it did not have any kind of fucking machines attached to it to light it up lights to tell you if it's a good job. It was just kind of like a dumb show is what it felt like to me. But yeah, I think it was in junior high school, like between 7th and 8th grade, that you could take that as an elective. And I'm like, fuck it, why not? I'll take first aid. And they taught me how to do CPR wrong, turns out.
No, you just learned the pro version.
true. That version of CPR is the first aid equivalent of that 1970s refrigerator that runs on illegal hairspray technology. It's just superior in every way, but it could in small cases get you killed, I guess. I was actually stunned at how well this episode does. Like, I think, I don't know if it did save lives, but like, you know, this technique is fairly sound, and they teach you, you know, to look and listen and feel for the heartbeat and the pulse, how to clear an airway. They also covered things I didn't even think of, like a child being like, oh, this looks like a fun game to play. No, this can break ribs. You must never play CPR. It's only if you can, if someone's not breathing. It's pretty good.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, but you're totally right. They were, they did go out of their way to be like, this is not a game. Do not play this.
Yeah. Like, I felt like the teacher, or the actor looks direct like the camera in some of these statements. They entered Alan, who's the little blonde Dennis the Menace type. They also have another little blonde who is a literal pick me.
Yeah.
And her name's Margot, and I swear to God, I freaked out. My fingers flew to Wikipedia. I thought this was Kirsten Dunst so hard.
I can see that. Yeah. It does look like her.
Yeah, man. Like, I couldn't believe it wasn't. Like, I was like, I had a minor mandala effect.
thinking that, like, I have a false memory that I didn't even actually have, that this girl is, but anyway, it's not. But I'm telling you, if you watch this episode, viewer at home, you will swear. There's a little bit of drama once Alan gets into the principal's office because he won't stop making fun of how ugly the doll is and how much he doesn't want to kiss her and how it needs a haircut and all that stuff. Do you know why the girls fought over who it was? Is it like a cootie type of thing? Like, oh, I don't want to kiss a doll, or?
Yeah, I think it just got too real. You know, they were all about it when it was time to pick, you know, who wants to do the CPR. But when it comes time to actually put your lips on the plastic mouth
that 1,700 other children have done in the last 5 years.
Yeah. Don't worry. He dabbed it slightly with like an alcohol wipe. So it's all clean now. Yeah, I think it's a cootie situation.
The three Gen Zers that listen to this podcast might be shocked to know that germ theory actually wasn't discovered until 1993. So we just didn't know any better, you know. Doctors didn't wash their hands. They ashed in open chest cavities. It's crazy. It's crazy because they're smoking in the OR too. You know they were.
Yeah.
So yeah, they save. They work together and they save this dummy's life. And the next scene is Henry going out to spend his hard-earned dollars on a new refrigerator. And does he go to Best Buy? Nah, it didn't exist back then. Did he go to Service Merchandise? No, although that did exist back then. He went to Chester Cheapo's discount appliance store.
Yeah, of course.
Chester himself gives him the deal of a lifetime. You know this is a serious place when you go in and there's a clown spinning on a drum and a seal balancing a ball, you know. A real seal. That's not a fake one, right? He has a real seal in the store?
There's no way there's a real seal.
Maybe it was animatronic. I don't know.
No, that's a real seal.
Is it really a real? I thought so. Like, how much does it cost to rent a seal a day?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's probably less expensive than you would think.
As I was told that, like, if you want a really good, like, bank or insurance company, that you look for a company that doesn't spend a lot on advertising. And that's where you're going to get your best deal. I feel like Cheapo Chester. You're spending all your profits on seal, like you're all this stuff to get people in the store. I'm suspecting you're overcharging to make up for that.
That's a good point.
I mean, because that's the thing. I come into the store, I see this guy in a like a Bob Barker 1970s green jacket, like he just won the fucking Masters or something, and it's got a giant red button that says "Born to Haggle." I am spinning. I don't mind haggling, but I'm spinning my heel and walking out the door the second I see that.
You don't mind haggling, you say. I can't stand haggling. I would be terrible. I would get taken total advantage of by Chester, Cheapo Chester.
I don't like to haggle, but I do live by the philosophy that I will literally talk all day if it'll save me $500. I mean,
yeah.
I don't get that ROI very often. So, like, yeah, Mr. Car Salesman. I'm not here to waste your time, but I will. Yeah, I will. I will be here for three more hours for that $500. Thank you very much. Drink your free coffee. Have one of your free. I don't know. They probably don't have like. What am I thinking of? What's the coffee dessert? Crumb cake.
A coffee cake.
Did they have coffee cake? Is that a thing?
Yeah, coffee cake's a thing. Coffee cake is delicious.
I was trying to bluff my way through the fact that I don't drink coffee. And I've been exposed here in this podcast, so anyway.
Yeah, I'll drink your what do you call it, choffee.
What'd you think of Cheapo Chester's sales tactic here?
Well, yeah, he's a pretty smarmy guy. You mean his tactic or his hidden tactic? Where
his hidden tactic, yeah.
His hidden tactic where he has a yokel. Mm-hmm. He has a country yokel waiting in the back room. Well, hang on. Well, this is a rootin' tootin' bargain. I want to buy this.
Yeah, he employs an out-of-work red-green impersonator to come up to every customer, claim that the refrigerator is a steal. He wants it right now. There's only one left. Wash, rinse, repeat. This is his just every day, all day tactic.
Yeah, yeah, you would think it wouldn't really work that often because you would overhear the guy screaming at the top of his lungs about how he wants to buy the refrigerator.
Yeah, said yokel doesn't seem too discreet either. Like, he wouldn't be the type to... It's been less than 30 seconds. That lady's been standing in the corner the whole time. He just launches into it, but...
Cheapo Chester does close deals fast.
He is a closer. ABC, always be Chester. He's got that non-lock. And the thing is like, this works because Henry's an idiot. Like, the high pressure, that's the one thing I will walk in a dealer when they start doing the high pressure stuff. I'm like, well, you guys are, I expect a certain amount of shade and haggling from a car dealership, but you're trying to do some high pressure tactics on me. I gotta get out of here, man. This is a crazy situation. It makes me physically ill to spend large amounts of money on appliances. I gotta at least research and think about it for a day. Get out of here.
Anyway. Right.
But yeah, and it activates Henry's competitive streak, and he out yokels the yokel and gets a fridge.
Might not be a real seal on this watch through. There is a button he presses to make it play with the ball with
his
nose.
Actually 100% right. That's not a real seal, but it's real enough to fool me in standard definition on the interweb. Let me tell you.
But also not a great use of resources for your appliance warehouse.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, this isn't a kiddie park. You're trying to appeal to adults. I mean, there's a couple directions you can go there, but like clowns and seal acts, I just don't know. I just don't know. Maybe it plays well for the soccer moms or something.
The older I get, the more I think you can just treat all adults like children. And probably should.
I have no response to that, because that's actually that feels like a Buddhist Zen cone. Like, yeah, the older I get, the more adults could be treated like children. Like, it's you're not wrong, is what I'm saying. So we're back at the Brewster place, and the kids are playing hide and seek in Henry's backyard. They got a nice clubhouse there, very cool. Rainbow steps, I love it. Where the old fridge sitting ominously against the wall, and the new fridge's box provides some tempting hiding spaces for children, and they're playing hide and seek. I guess I buried the lead.
They're playing hide and seek. Two of them, Margo and Punky, are able to hide in there at the same time, leaving Cherry all alone, which is rather rude. Don't double up on your hiding spaces.
Yeah,
find your own space.
They're pulling the Metal Gear Solid trick of, doing the walking box, Alan's AI is written exceptionally poorly, I gotta say. He completely doesn't smoke it out in time for them to be ollie-ollie oxen-free. And here's the tragedy that's about to happen, listener. Henry comes out, knows, he knows, he's old school. He knows you gotta take a fridge door off so children can't get locked inside. But he sees Cherry going inside, and then she comes outside, can't find a hiding place, ducks in the fridge. Henry comes back around with his tools, but, it's starting to snow. It's getting cold. All the kids need to go inside. Everybody goes inside. And he assures the Punky, who's worried about Cherry, no, I saw her go inside the house. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that fooled me on the first playthrough because there is the scene where she briefly goes into the house and then leaves. And that got me. I was like Henry.
We'll be back to talk more about why is Mr. Feeny a car after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
And now we're back with more. Why is Mr. Feeny a car? So the camera, as everyone goes inside, slowly fades in on the refrigerator, where you can hear increasingly frantic banging and cries for help as Cherry. And I gotta say that, like, the setting for the misty eye started here, because anytime I see like a 10-year-old child afraid and alone, it really does something to my heart.
I mean, it is a legitimately terrifying situation if it were to happen in reality.
There's so many dangerous things out in the world, and I maybe kids today can't relate that. Maybe even you, but like, I was born still in a generation where your parents would literally kick you outside at like 8 o'clock in the morning during the summer and like forbid you from coming. They'll like throw a pitcher of Kool-Aid and peanut butter and jellies at you like wild animals, and then, you know, make you come out, throw you in the tub and feed you dinner. And then that was the routine. But like, there's so much dangerous stuff out there, and kids get into shit. And the thought of a little girl freezing to death outside or suffocating in a fridge all alone. Whew.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
I was a woods kid. A lot of time in the woods.
Same. My house kind of bordered on a cornfield. And then a big woods that had like 20 feet of woods, and then a train track. And then, as far as I was concerned, infinity woods.
And, right.
I played on that train track so much as a kid. I cannot believe
that. I had the fear of God put in to me about playing on the train tracks from that one movie. What is it?
Stand By Me?
Is it Stand By Me where the kid gets the foot stuck in the train track?
I think that is. It's one of Will Wheaton, and they go to see a dead body.
I think that's it. And getting stuck in the train track has been a lifelong fear of mine.
Ironically, that movie came out in a time when it could have been impactful for me as a child, but I was forbidden to watch rated R movies, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
No matter how life-saving they might be.
I was left defenseless to all those locomotives. So inside, where it's warm, and children are not in immediate danger, Henry is just in love with his new fridge. He's learning about all its new features, and he's bragging about the deal he got. When the adults hear the children still looking for Cherry, and like, you know what? We might need to investigate, get involved a little bit.
Right.
This is kind of the only funny scene where, you know, this old guy's bragging, and then without even trying to... his neighbor, Betty, shows him up by saying, you know, you went to that Chester guy. I don't know. My aunt got ripped off there, and tells beat for beat the exact scam that Henry fell for, even down to the same yokel. Like, this guy has been using the same yokel for years.
Right. That's where we find out that Cheapo Chester is actually the yokel.
It's like a Batman and Alfred situation where.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I do feel like that at some point the state's attorney general would get involved. Like, somebody's got a call on this guy, and like,
it's First Amendment protection. You're allowed to pretend. Since when is the imagination to be penalized like that?
Yeah, yokel collusion is not illegal in the state of Illinois, apparently. Explains a lot about Chicago politics, honestly. So yeah, they're the kids are like thinking, and I guess the thing is like it's Henry kind of blows off the kids' concerns, like, oh, maybe Cherry's just a super good hider, and they're like, no, actually she's the worst. This is very highly unusual for her not to be it already. And the parents start to get a little anxious, and they start checking around, and we see the adults increasingly worried about Cherry being lost out here in a cold storm when Henry has a flash of insight and checks on the old fridge and discovers there Cherry's apparently lifeless body. She's lost consciousness. Yeah. She's non-responsive. Jay, can Punky possibly save the day?
Well, I should hope so. Only if she paid attention in school, kids. Pay attention in school. It might just save a life.
I love how they use Alan as like, yeah, this episode's packed with more parables and illustrations than your average Sermon on the Mount. Like, Alan here is here to directly learn his lesson that you were cutting capers and not paying attention during CPR class, and now your best friend and classmate dead at your feet. Don't you feel like a giant asshole? He does. He turns out he does feel like a massive asshole. Henry's excuse is he's just too old, I guess.
They didn't have CPR when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was Michelangelo dissected the first body, and I was already in my 40s by then.
Yeah, that happened in 1969.
Right.
At the height of the Vietnam War, they finally figured out the cardiopulmonary system and invented CPR. So
yeah, Henry is like, do the CPR. You're a child. You know what to do. Didn't you learn this in school?
Yeah, Punky's been talking about this RPC stuff. Like, get in there, kid.
RPC.
And Alan, like, wets his pants and says, I can't do it. I don't know how. I didn't pay attention. And Henry's like, well, do you know 911? And then every child at home learns that you can dial 911 to summon adults to help you at the murder. And so Henry does at least the first step of CPR training was just send someone else to go get help. And then summons Punky. And again, I found this very oddly touching, and I don't really fully understand why, except for I'm a parent. But these little girls are just such little women, man. They're like worried, but they're falling back on their training, and they're doing everything right and doing all their steps, and they got the teamwork going.
Mm-hmm. It's Grace Under Fire. Punky's, when the pressure's on, they step up. It's inspiring.
Yeah, Punky's running this scene like she's the chief resident of the ER. She's like barking out orders and telling Margo to keep cadence and breathing for a friend. And after some heart-wrenching strings and some anxiety from the audience, Cherry does take a shuddering breath and return to life.
She comes back pretty good. She's resurrected Lazarus style.
And I also got like, I continued, because I was a little shook up the rest of the episode because like, okay, I kind of got it together after the kid came back to life. But then her grandma came out and was like, you know, bless your heart, girls, for knowing the right thing to do and all that stuff. Like, I can't imagine what it would be like to have an elderly black woman bless my heart. Like that's got to give you like a +1 for righteousness, right? Like that's just a permanent buff. You could live off that for like a year or two. But I got choked up when she said, you know, hugged all the kids close and thanked her, and like, you know, it's you see the concern for the grandma, and she's a nurse, so she knows this is serious, and the paramedics are on the way, and I don't know, and even Alan gets a little bit of redemption because he feels like a big shit and he's crying because he almost got his friend killed. And
yeah, what got me was when Alan was like, I'm just a worthless sack of nothing. That's when I was like, oh, poor kid. I also don't pay attention in school.
I also feel like a worthless sack of shit. Yeah. But Henry comes and said, "What one thing I learned in recovery is that stinking thinking. And I didn't know shit about CPR too. So I tell you what, Alan, let's go down to the YMCA or whatever. And we'll learn together," which really bucks up the little kid.
Right.
Good for him. Also, now that I'm thinking about it, this child like is kind of an amazing actor. That's not
He cries.
Easy to cry on demand and kind of like he plays like the big shit. Michelle Tanner don't have this range. I'm telling you that.
And there's two of her.
Yeah. They got something now that she is like 2 years old and the stuff I've seen her, but like, yeah, twice the actor, half the range, man.
Well, so, Alan does some acting. He does some child acting. That's for sure. I wonder what happened to him.
I don't know. He's got that like child star look. So I imagine involved cocaine and
yeah, it's probably not a good
prison sentences, but yeah. I kind of stopped looking into it because he just got bleak after a while. I think Different Strokes broke me. Like, the older brother who was a massive cokehead is the only one that lived? Like, what?
Yeah.
But, also, the other thing I got to give Henry a big thumbs up for, even though he kind of got rolled by a rube, took personal responsibility. He kind of took it easy on himself, decided, I can wait till tomorrow to take that door off because of the storm. And can you imagine what it would feel like? That one snap decision you make to just like, it's cold, it can wait till later, would kill a child?
No, I can't imagine that.
Good Christ. I don't know, you get it. I just join her. I just wouldn't tell anybody. I'd just go crawl in the fridge with her and shut the door. But there's still some leftover work, because it's never good to be unconscious and not breathing that long. Maybe there's some long-term brain damage, and the grandma's worried, but she asks her how she feels, and she's got the old reliable, "I feel hungry," and Chief Resident Punky Brewster, MD, pronounces her going to be okay.
I think she's going to be just fine.
That is the end of the episode. Jay, how do we rank this in terms of very special? How effective? What is the two axes that we go? Is like, how effective was it at describing the problem, at realistically displaying the problem, and then how effective was its advice to deal with it?
I think it's a B on displaying the problem, because getting locked in a refrigerator. I could even be an A, honestly. It does a pretty good job of making you not want to play around. Did I say elevator? Refrigerator.
Refrigerator, yeah, I think you got it.
And in terms of dishing out actionable advice, I give it a B there. Because, come on, face it, like, little kids aren't going to snap into action and save a life with a CPR, but they do get it with the... step one, call the paramedics. Call 911.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that alone is probably worth the A. I on the setup, that's the thing about, because this is an old, and like, I don't even know if this is a real problem anymore. It's like my dad taught me about this. Like, don't, if you ever see an old fridge, because, you know, in a junkyard or something, because we had that stuff in rural Indiana. In any circumstances, someone's basement, don't ever get in it, because the doors can sometimes lock and they're airtight and you can suffocate. I don't like these refrigerators were super fucking old in my time. It's the joke of the show. The only guy like Henry, I don't even know if this is a real problem. I can't imagine. When was the last locking refrigerator that wasn't bolted into the deep freeze of a fucking restaurant kitchen? When's the last locking fridge sold in the United States? Like...
It's like Cherry's Law was passed.
Yeah.
Probably in like the 1939 or something.
If you have to have a locking fridge, it must have a glow in the dark pull handle on the inside.
What were they trying to keep in their refrigerators back in the day?
That's a good damn question. I wonder if easy and inexpensive magnetic seals were prohibitively expensive. So to keep the cold inside, you actually had to have a latch. And why the hell would you put a latch on the other side? What are you going to have? Children stuck inside wanting to get out? Nah. That saves 50 cents at the assembly plant.
Yeah, Cheapo Chester passes those savings directly on to you.
True, so you can buy more animatronic seals. Yeah, this is like I think the most successful, arguably least entertaining, but most successful of the very special episodes. But unfortunately, it's a kind of a yesteryear problem. So learn CPR, just do chest compressions. Don't worry about the breathing. That stuff sorts itself out, they say. And go check out your local YMCA.
We're going to have to actually learn and do a retraction and possibly an apology.
There's got to be at least a registered nurse, if not a full-on practicing doctor listening to this podcast. And they're probably aghast or horrified. Or what I'm secretly hoping... Yeah, that is the new guidelines, but if my family passed out, I'd breathe every once in a while, too, because we all know that's the superior way. The average American is too fucking stupid to do two things at once in a crisis, so there you go. But
there you go.
Yeah. We got feedback. Feeding@baldmove.com is how you send that feedback in, but first, Jay... Tell people what you're about, where they can find you, if they want to get enhanced Feeny experiences.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jay McCain. I do a live stream about 4 or 5 times a week. It's over on Twitch. It's blue_J_streams. We just watch TV, hang out, have a good time. It's a fun hang, so find me there.
All right. Legit Salvage says, would you consider the Community Dungeons and Dragons episode a very special episode? Special, in fact, it's been removed from streams. I've only seen it once, right when Community was first added to Netflix before The Culling, so I don't really remember how it goes other than the Fat Neil plot. Great work as always, fellas. Always enjoyable. Do you know what they're referring to here?
Her tale of it, but like he mentioned, it's been removed from streaming. So I've never seen it myself.
The one I'm thinking of, I know there's 2 Community episodes removed, and I can't remember exactly the reasons for all of them, but one of them was they host a D&D episode, and Chang comes in character as a drow, and he's wearing a silver white wig, he's got the pointy ears, and he's got jet black shoe polish over every bit of his face. So... I don't know. Is that blackface? It's definitely playing footsie with the idea that this is like a borderline issue. But like, have people seen black people? they're not literally hashtag 000000 on the hex decimal color scale. You know, they're rich chocolatey browns, light mochas. Yeah. You know, like there's all kinds of variant, but jet black like a salamander from Warhammer. Right. They're not black. They have skin like charcoal, and they have glowing red eyes. They're not. But I wouldn't have the balls to dress as a salamander. No. I gotta say,
was the joke in the episode that he was wearing drow face or something? Like, does it get addressed in the episode?
I think it's like one, yeah, it's because I guess that's the thing, is like the old blackface, they definitely did use that dark shoe polish, yeah. Right? They weren't going for a rich, natural, honoring the rich, natural tones of the people that they were aping the style of. So there probably was, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know I honestly don't know how to feel about it. I feel like in 10 years, some of that stuff is going to be, they're going to do it on a case by case basis. Like, this was hateful. This was stupid. A lot of Always Sunny hit by that too. Cause they did a lot of, you know, blackface commentary. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if that's a very special episode. It could have been a very special episode if they had put like some, hey, there's some cultural insensitivity.
Oh,
we can learn from this kind
go.
Of moment in front of, but they're just disappearing.
We'll never know.
I don't know. I don't think it could qualify as a very special episode because Asian men dressing up as night elves and offending black people, I don't think is a thing we're struggling with nowadays. But
no, much.
The solution's easy. Just pull it out of the archive. Craig T from the UK says, I'm in need of a bit of fan help. I've said previously that I recently got into this podcast after putting it off for some reason, and now I'm straight binging them. All these memories of Knight Rider and the many other shows you've covered have come back to me, and the biggest one was Kit being hit by a missile fired out the battle of the, out of the back of a truck and being left for dead. I thought it was the Goliath episode, but after listening to the last episode of Feeny Season 2, I realized it weren't. I tried searching on YouTube, but as I'm in the UK, I can't watch the series and I can't find anything. If Aaron doesn't know or remember, I'm hoping someone else could shed light on my memory. I understand I was 6 or 7 at the time, but I'm sure it was a season finale or mid-season break because I remember having to wait a while to see the next part. For Kid, anything longer than a week might as well be the rest of your life. Hope you can find my answer. Thanks. I think you are talking about, because I don't remember, there's several times Kit gets destroyed. The ones that stick out of my mind are definitely Goliath flipping him over. He gets dipped in acid at some point that demolecularly bonds him. It eats up. He just gets really fucked up. But I think you're talking about season 3, episode 1, Night of the Drones. The synopsis is Michael meets up with Bonnie, who is fresh back from being exiled in season 2, at a university research center in San Francisco to convince her to return to the Foundation. Elsewhere, a criminal mastermind named Margot Sheridan rounds up some high-tech criminals, including Bonnie's old college advisor, to pull a robbery at the Federal Reserve Bank. During the confrontation, Kit gets destroyed by a rocket targeted at his exhaust system. Bonnie rebuilds Kit, giving him new improvements, including the newly designed dashboard and the anamorphic synthesizer. Later, Michael faces off with Margot Sheridan, David Halston, and his robotic drone cars that he unleashes to eliminate him. That sounds... It meets all the criteria. It was a season opener, so you probably transposed waiting for it for a long time with having waited for it for a long time. Kit gets destroyed, and I looked into it. Apparently, they destroyed Kit at the start of season 3 because in the late 80s, you'll recall that some of the luxury sedans were starting to have things. Like, if you leave your door open, it would say, "Door is ajar." And they were having dashes that were very LED and very inspired by Knight Rider, and they felt like they had this future car that was falling behind. So they came up with the gimmick to destroy Kit to rebuild him and give him an entirely new, more futuristic cockpit.
Wow. And like Kit wasn't good enough already. They had to re-up it.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. Just because the Buick LeSabres are saying door is ajar, I do not think it's a supercar with a supercomputer and human-level intelligence. I don't know what these guys were thinking. Even I, as a 7-year-old... knew that I couldn't go to my uncle's fucking Cadillac and talk into my Casio watch and have it bust through a cement block car. I don't know. It's really stupid. But I don't know. I guess we got a cool new car. I remember Kit. There's at one point I remember watching Kit and thinking, is this still cool? Because they kept on adding features, and eventually he would like transform and have rocket pods coming out of him. And I remember thinking, like, is this still cool? I don't know if this is still cool.
Yeah. I mean, it starts off with the guy with the cool car, and then eventually it's a transformer. It can do your taxes. It can do what can it do, you know?
Yeah.
I guess there's a limit.
You can't bust through center block walls, that's for sure. So I don't know. Maybe that check that out. See if you can see it on a couple of clips on YouTube. If that doesn't jingle a bell, jiggle a memory. Craig... P.S. is this. I hope you consider watching some 70s, 80s sci-fi, such as the old Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers. Talking of banging theme songs, both of those are fantastic. Yeah, you're not lying. I don't have any special affection for Battlestar Galactica. I don't know why I missed that, but I did. But Buck Rogers. Oh, my God. Aaron Gray, super hottie. I love the robot Twiggy.
He had that, God, I always found that
kind of like trademark.
Found that so annoying. I think you're alone on this one. Yeah.
Really? You didn't like the
no.
Listen,
absolutely
here,
not.
Yeah. I got a lot of fond memories. There's a lot of, they do a lot of goofs on Buck Rogers in Rick and Morty. Like Birdman is essentially a goof on the bird people in that series. And, yeah, I got a lot of fond memories of Buck Rogers. Maybe in season 4, we can go and cast our eyes at some other, because we still have him. Man, there's the fall guy's coming out tomorrow. Well, I guess I'm revealing our actual recording schedule here, but yes, Fall Guy, the movie is coming out tomorrow. We still got Fall Guy that we haven't looked watched. We got like I said, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers. I'm trying to think of some others. There's a whole bunch of The Equalizer, you know. So we could go back into the 70s, Starsky
and
Hutch.
That would be fun.
Chips
would be fun.
Gotta watch Chips. California Highway Patrol. Oh my God.
Talk about propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no problem you can't solve in California if you can just make it to the Nevada state line.
Back when state lines used to mean
California Highway Patrol. Yeah. Yeah. Back when we were living in the real America. That's Feeny at baldmove.com. If you'd like to get in, let us know how we're doing. Talk about your thoughts. You got any opinions on CPR? You got any opinions on diagnosing children with ADD? just using 5 minutes of their behavior on television shows. Feeny at baldmove.com. That's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back next week with another very special episode. This time, this is another one that's seared into my brain, y'all. It's an episode of Little House on the Prairie, Matter of Faith, where, what was the hell is it? It was Engel. Mama Engel get scratched with a rusty nail, I believe, while Paul and the kids are away, and damn near dies of lockjaw.
Oof.
Can she survive the illness and the disease ravaging her body all alone, ridden with fever in the cabin? We'll find out next week on a very special episode of Feeny. Jay, take us out of here.
Hey, Kit, why don't you hit the very special ejector seats?